will discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
Welcome to BEP Live on a Black Executive Perspective. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm Crispy Reed. And we cut through the noise and get straight to what matters live with you. We talk about power, politics, culture, leadership, and the moments that shape our lives right now. No filters, no safe takes, just honest dialogue and real accountability. So let's get into it.
Absolutely. So tonight, we're going to talk about a narrative that keeps getting recycled, that Black America is broken, moral, and defined by the inner city. This conversation was sparked by a recent op-ed in the Wall Street Journal arguing that Black America needs a moral rejuvenation. And to be fair, parts of that argument are valid. Personal responsibility matters. Morality matters. And accountability matters. But as we know in life, multiple things can be true at the same time. So do the policies that shape housing, wealth, education, and opportunity in this country. And here's what almost never gets talked about. Millions of Black Americans are working, raising families, building businesses, earning solid incomes, and doing life every day. And they're not celebrities. They're not athletes. They're just regular people. But you don't hear nothing about that. Even in the distressed neighborhoods that they talk about, the inner city, most people get up and go to work. And they try to do the right thing by their families. So tonight, we're not choosing sides. We're choosing the truth, the whole truth. Because half-truths are how people stay stuck.
All right, well, let's get into this whole truth and nothing but the truth.
And so you, and help, so help you God.
Right.
Hold on, Chris, before we go deep, I'm just encouraging everyone that's watching us, listen to us, please jump in because we want to hear your points of view. We want to hear your thoughts. This is one of those uncomfortable conversations, right? And so we got to have it because we can't ignore it. And we got to sit down and throw the cards on the table.
Absolutely. You ready to talk about it?
Let's talk about it, my brother.
All right. So let's just establish a baseline for folks who may not know, and I know you prefaced it early on, but before we go deep into it, this conversation is based on a Wall Street Journal op-ed by a gentleman named Robert L. Woodson Sr. It was titled, Black America Needs a Moral Rejuvenation. Whether you agree with it or you disagree with it, the argument deserves to be understood clearly. So that's what we're here to talk about tonight. Talk about, hey, what's the pros and cons and the puts and calls of what he actually stated? How much should we take and how much should we spit out the bone?
Yeah, and look, let's be fair. He makes some good points, so we're not here to dismiss the whole thing, right? Because he argues that after the civil rights movement, something shifted. He writes that leadership moved from moral cessation to political patronage, and that welfare and bureaucracy replaced mutual aid and neighborhood accountability. I don't know if I agree with that 100%, but whatever. And then he says racial grievance began to replace dignity and that poor Black communities were told that they only could be redeemed by outsiders while an industry grew around managing despair instead of fixing it. Okay, it's possible. He makes a strong statement when he says victimhood is not liberation, it's a leash. Woodson acknowledges that racism is real and still exists, but he argues it cannot be the explanation for every failure or excuse for every crime. And his core message is this: true empowerment requires moral clarity, self-criticism, accountability, and the courage to confront wrongdoing inside the community, not just outside of it.
So, you know, to be clear here and just to be liberal in the idea, we do have to sweep our own porch before we start complaining about somebody else's stuff. But the article is not saying racism never existed. It's not saying the system doesn't matter. What it's saying is that without internal accountability, without checking yourself, no external justice can save our community or a community. That's the argument.
And so here's the thing. And this is why we wanted to bring this up, because one of the things that I've seen happen a lot, and not just, I've seen it more recently, Maybe, but I've seen it over time, right? That people bring up this argument and they say it like this is the only thing that's holding Black Americans back. It's just this one silver bullet, okay? And that's not true. Part of it, in terms of what we're talking about, responsibility, makes sense. There's no question we as a people need to do better, in which we're going to dive into. But the bottom line is to say that this is the only reason, okay? And so we got to really look at this, right? Because while someone, like I said, what Woodson is saying is true, we also have to ask what happens when morality and responsibility are discussed without fully addressing policy, history, and the systems people are navigating. And that's where we go next.
Absolutely. So let's jump into it. Let's talk about, you know, the policy, the structure, and the playing field in which we exist, you know. And so one of the things that we need to understand is how we see ourselves as Americans and how they see us as Americans and how it's two different Americas. You said earlier, Black America. Well, there's no such thing as Hispanic America that I've heard of. You know what I'm saying? It might be Asian America, but they call them Chinatowns, right? Like they call them Chinatowns. So this concept, of where we are, and one of the things that had recently come up, we had did a show about this, Tony, and it was about redlining. And we was talking about, you know, how the classic path to wealth in this country has been real estate and land ownership and things of that nature. You never got, I don't think you got your mule. I know you done sold your 40 acres by now.
I didn't
now.
Get no 40 acres, though, bro. I never got 40 acres.
Oh, you never got none of it. Okay, so we in never the same boat.
I didn't even get an acre, half an acre.
But once again, you know, this goes back to something that I know you've heard plenty of times. I've heard plenty of times is these reparations and blah, 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 all this other stuff. The qualification that we talked about that for other people who did get it and we didn't get ours. But I think one of the things that we keep hearing over and over again is, and we played this, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where Martin Luther King, you know, gave us a summation about it's hard to pull up your bootstraps when you don't have on boots. You know what I'm saying? You walk in this journey, and this concept of, and we've heard it plenty of times, y'all just need to put y'all head down and try harder and do better and all these other things. But that housing and wealth patterns, that didn't happen by accident. They're not just letting people in the club. It's a lot of bouncers in this thing. It's like gatekeepers.
Right.
What say you?
Well, no, I'm agreeing with you, right? So let's look at the stats, right?
Yeah.
Redlining and federal housing policy restricted access to home ownership, the primary wealth building tool for American families. That's a fact. So to say that that doesn't have an effect, see, this is the point here. It has an effect, okay? The GI Bill benefits were unevenly administered, limiting Black veterans' access to mortgages and education after World War II. The racial wealth gap remains large today, affecting neighborhood quality, schools, and intergenerational stability. So at the end of the day, you can't just say, hey, you guys got to be more responsible and hold yourself accountable. That part, Chris and I agree with. There is no question. We have to do a lot better in the Black community, okay, in terms of taking care of our families and all the other things that we're going to dive into. But you can't sit here and say that these other things don't matter as well, okay? So let me give you an example. So one of Woodson's arguments, he said post-civil rights. Okay, so in his mind, this, and not just him, because I've heard other people say it too, okay, is that once civil rights was passed, Black people then just went under the shade tree and just said, Eureka, we arrived. Right, and then we took our foot off the gas. We stopped striving. Yes. We stopped thriving, you know, our families, blah, 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 blah. So what his thing is that we became less accountable in terms of our own communities. And then obviously the policies unleash this, lack of hunger to thrive in the United States. That's what he's saying. So it was the policies, the new policies that made us less hungry in terms of moving forward. Okay, so let's see. But again, let's back up, because me and Chris just talked about something. Okay, we talked about redlining and federal housing policies. Okay. When did those things happen?
That was before.
Thank
that.
You. Thank you. When did it happen?
Yeah.
When did it happen?
Right. Okay.
That was years earlier before civil rights. What's right. up with right. that? Also, right. we just talked about the GI Bill, right? How it was unevenly administered, limiting black veterans' access to mortgages and education after what? World War II. Oh, so wait a minute. That had nothing to do with the civil rights. So the policies that were put in place even before civil rights. So you can't sit here and say that, oh, you everybody was doing well. Then they came with these leftist social programs, and then everybody just sat back and ate an apple or start doing the boogaloo, right, and forgot who they are. And that's the reason for the decay, when you can look at policies prior to that. That limited black people's ability to get wealth and all these other type things.
Well, you know, and not to go too deep into the history, but it's apropos here. The original GI Bills came from the Revolutionary War, where they was telling people, we'll give you this, we'll give you that if you fight for us. Went on into the Civil War, where if you come fight for us today. And then all of a sudden we did put our lives on the line and then came and said, okay, where's mine? And they was like, go on somewhere. Let me put these Jim Crow laws in effect. Going somewhere, let me put the. So the trust factor makes it hard for you to really believe that there's an opportunity on the other side when you're being presented with things. It's going on right now, but we'll talk about that at another date. But the moral of the story is, you talked about this has existed prior to the civil rights movement. The old bait and switch or banana in the tailpipe has been going on for hundreds of years, bruh.
Buddy, hundreds exactly. of years. So you can't sit here and just say it's just our fault. Okay, yeah. Now, I don't want to get lost because, look, my man makes good points, right? Mm-hmm. There is a moral agency that matters, right? You know, research, and let's be fair, consistently shows that stable families, consistent work, and education significantly reduce the likelihood of poverty across all races. And this is from the Brookings Institute, right? Communities with strong social norms and informal accountability experience lower crime and better youth outcomes, even in low-income areas. Okay, that makes total sense, right? You have a family. You have the family together, the whole nine yards. You're creating a foundation. Totally get it. This, again, is where I have challenges, right? Because it's not what he's saying. He's 100% right. But I just want to go back to what it says here, consistent work and education. Okay? So again, it's always framed that in the black community, number one, when they talk about black community, Chris, where are they talking?
Inner cities.
So all black inner people cities, just living in the cities. Okay.
That's right.
Which
right.
That's it. So it's the inner. That's where they look at. Right. We know that's all right. white people don't live in New York City. We know all white people don't live in L.A. We know all white people. I can go on and on and on. Right. But all black people only live in the inner city, which we know that's is not right. true. Okay. Right. We know it's not true. However, also creating that narrative that the people in the inner cities aren't working, okay, and are just getting welfare is not true. It's not true, okay? Yeah, are some people? Absolutely, but that would be no different than any other community. Look, mm-hmm. let's be fair here. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, in the inner city, okay? Single-parent household. So did my family miss having a father figure? Absolutely. So guess what? When I got married, what do you think I was focused on? Being a father for my children and being there the whole nine yards, right? But here's the kicker. My friends, some of them had single parent households. Some of them had a mother and a father in a household. But the one thing that was constant, they all went to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody went to work. Some of my friends' father worked at Chrysler or Ford. My mother was a social worker. Everybody had a job. Now, they wasn't nuclear scientists. They didn't, you know, they didn't have master's degrees and all that. They wasn't making big money. But at the end of the day, they still went out and worked every day. But when they talk about this, the black community, they frame it as, You know, black people are just not, they're just getting off on the system. They're blaming white people for their issues, and they're not thriving and striving. Here's another thing I want, and this is the other thing, and I want, then I'm going to jump it over to you, Chris. Here's the thing. There's millions of poor white Americans, or especially in the rural areas, Appalachian, they're poverty.
I'm going to get into that. Economic distress, right?
All right? But they're always framed as victims of economic decline.
That's correct.
Poor black communities are framed as evidence of moral failure, right? Same struggle, different narrative, and that difference matters. So why is it with one community, it's just like industry moved out, the coal mines are closed, all these things, and this is why this community is struggling, right? But when it comes to black people, that narrative don't even play. How many big organizations, companies moved out of Detroit, Michigan, or Chicago? All that wasn't a part of the auto industry. Don't you think that has something to do with also the moral decay, or the economic thing? You don't hear that. You don't hear that. Go ahead, my brother.
So, and we talked about this when we talked about the corporate bailouts of the auto industry, things of that nature. But what I wanted to talk about, what you brought up earlier, was the consistency of work. And I was thinking, you said it with the Appalachians, but the coal mines, the steel industry, these folks didn't have the work that they had in the early, 1900s, where it was pumping out so much steel and so much coal and all this other stuff. When that stuff went away, they weren't called bums. They weren't called... You know what I'm saying? They were like, oh man, get your bootstraps. They were felt, it was a situation where you wanted to subsidize them and help them and all this other stuff and lend the courtesy that they would deserve as American citizens, because unfortunately the industry was no longer headed in that way. The only industry that was assigned or aligned with us was the agriculture industry a long time ago.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Cotton.
But as you stated, I grew up in Peoria where Caterpillar was there. My father-in-law worked there 34 years. My uncle worked there 49 years. There was industries that we were tied into that was building America this entire time. The automobile industry where you grew up. It was brothers there. It was sisters there working side by side with white folks. But all of a sudden, when it goes away, there's no such thing as a black flight. There's a white flight. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
If I've got used to something, I don't want to be here when it's bad either, right? Exactly. So exactly. I'm going to move on. But the thing is, we are clearly assigned, just like we talked about how diversity is a code switch or a whistle,
dog whistle
for black. That's the slickness of how it works out, where we always bringing a property value down of the United States. We always making it harder for we talked about the taking our jobs and all this other stuff. That type of stuff has power when, you talked about this earlier, we start to allow it to resonate in a false reality.
Buddy, flat out. And so you spoke of that. Let me show you guys, okay? Because here's the thing. Chris brings up an excellent point, right? This is not just white people saying this, right?
Yep.
From right-wing ideology, right? Yeah. These are also black people saying the same stuff, okay? Yeah. Which, I'll be honest with you, it kind of drives me crazy.
The continued effort of colonialism and white people placing themselves in positions of power
when they do not have the power. Because their culture, black culture is toxic. The black culture is toxic. We have produced a culture that is toxic. And let's get on the fact that there's no fathers
so
in
white
the black
culture
home.
Let's talk about that. This, none of this is going to work if y'all are just going to sit here and make up shit.
The concept in philosophy is you can't turn generals into specifics or specifics into generals. You went to a Winn-Dixie and got a bad plum, so all Winn-Dixies sell black plums.
You know? So it's black culture. Black culture is toxic.
That's my point. Irresponsible and it's horrible.
But my point is, so here's the thing, is that me and you spoke offline before we came on, right? And at the end of the day, I've been blessed more than I ever thought about. But I can speak to these things because I've actually been in 46 of the 50 states. And I'm not talking flying over them. And I'm talking about actually there, meeting with people, chatting with people, hearing stories, the whole nine yards, right? But if you grow up And then we'll give you two dynamics here. If you grow up, number one, only in, if I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, which I did, but if I lived there all my life and all I saw is what I saw, I would think Detroit is the world. Okay? The antithesis of that, if I grew up outside of black culture, if I grew up somewhere else, and then people are telling me they're messed up, they're this and that, this is why they're not growing, and that's all you hear. And then from a media standpoint, you see, you know, whatever they frame from a narrative, you start believing it, right? And a lot of times, black people believe these things. But look, here, let's debunk it, okay? Because I want to debunk this, right? So here's some critical data that people really need to oversee, that the inner city is always overrepresentative in the narrative. Okay, most black Americans do not live in high crime inner city neighborhoods. That's a fact. Okay, the black population is spread across suburbs, exurbs, small cities, and mixed income communities. But again, when they talk about the black community, they're always talking the inner city. And then the other thing, when they talk about inner city, they don't work. Well, wait a minute. Most black Americans work. Labor force participation among black adults remain high relative to population share. Millions work in healthcare, education, logistics, government, tech, sales, construction, professional services. Millions of black households earn middle and upper income, middle income. Six-figure black households exist across all industries, not just sports and entertainment. Even in the distressed neighborhoods, people go to work. They take care of the kids. The problem is not that the success doesn't exist. The problem is success doesn't sell outrage. And that's what that is, right? So, but as a black person, you know, I was telling you, man, about when we went to Martha's Vineyard, right? We go there every year, right? And we went this year and they had the African-American Film Festival, okay? And we did a live show from there, right? And at the African-American Film Festival, you're meeting people, brothers and sisters from all over the country that are thriving and striving and thriving there, and some own businesses, they're entrepreneurs, they're millionaires, they're regular people, they own this, they're running that, right? But if you don't never see that, you only think black people do well in sports and entertainment, okay? Mm-hmm. Which all the other industries don't even show up, okay? And so these narratives talking about black people, that their culture is, but that black people, and this is the thing, these are black people saying it, right? Because at the end of the day, they bought into a narrative. And more importantly, I hate to say it, when you don't see other brothers and sisters being promoted outside of sports and entertainment, okay? If you don't see that, and then you hear this narrative, and then all you see is black people being thrown in jails and stuff of that nature, that's what you think.
Mm-hmm. And it's called the invisibility trap, right? And so what you can't see, you can't comprehend. The problem is this, though. Once you see it, your knee-jerk reaction is, dude, a sellout. Like, in order to, this dude golfing, this dude playing tennis.
Oh, yeah,
he's a token. A sellout.
You can't win they got for
him
losing.
One. They got him one.
You buddy, going to school. You're so true.
It's kind of like when you was a kid, you didn't want people to know you had good grades because you didn't want to be labeled as a nerd or teacher's pet. It's just we have done a disservice to ourselves because this is why, though. This is what we were infected with. The more depraved that we are or we are perceived to be, it's a pacifier for the things that they're not willing to do or can't do. I call it the Jerry Springer effect. People love Jerry Springer because no matter how bad your family was, you could tune in and say, them motherfuckers is worse than that. Oh, my God. At least my cousin ain't got my brother.
You know that's just, right.
It was a false positive. You dig what I'm saying? It was a false positive. And that's how they do it is they say, hey, as long as they worse than me. Lyndon Johnson, we talk about that quote. If you can convince yourself that you are better than the lowest black person, you doing all right. That was from the president.
Here's the thing, though, bro. So you make up a good point, right? So that's an excellent point. So you don't hear that because at the end of the day, when it comes to white America and the poor people in white America, you don't hear about how poor they are, what they're going through, and we're going to help them. You don't hear that. But what they do, how they use them, is that they create a narrative that these black people, Hispanic people, taking your job. Right. So at one point, we don't work. All right? Yeah. We sitting under a shade tree chilling. But then at another point, we're taking white people, poor white people's job. So they use them to get riled up. That's the only, they only use them to divide people. That's it. All right? Yeah. That's it. But they don't do nothing to help those communities as well, right? But what they do is they use them as political pawns, all right, to get them to vote a certain way, because you just got finished saying the Jerry Springer effect, right? Well, look, I may be in the trailer eating mayonnaise sandwiches, but as long as I'm over the black dude, I'm good.
Right. All right. Absolutely.
And that's just the, and look, that is a, that, I don't care what nobody said. Those are facts. Okay. That's a fact. Right. Okay. Right. Flat out. All right. But here's the other thing. I want to talk about this, man, because here's the thing.
Before you go get ahead, into it, go though, ahead. Before you get into that, I know what angers you most is the hypocrisy. What angers you more than anything else, and I've had conversations with you in the past, talking out of both sides of your ass where we're not educated, we're not civilized, we're not this, we're not that. But then you create policies to say we can't get into schools. You create policies to say we can't get education because you know that's what we're doing. We're going to school. We're getting educated. And you're like, they so young, they so... Go ahead.
Brother, but you know this, right? But so this is so funny because you just, we spoke about this. Hold on. Let's do this. Let's get some of the comments in, right? Cool. Because let's, we got a lot of comments coming up, right? So who we got here? We got, is this Reggie? I'm trying to see because I'm having a hard time getting through my thing here. I only see part of it. There's just a bunch of stuff here, right? So somebody says here, I can't see who it is. Moving the field goal is part of the policy strategy.
Absolutely.
Right? 100%. So of course, so bro, flat out, right? And then we have from the Gru A. Pooh, the motive is to intentionally disadvantage black folk, shape the perceptive as a whole community. And thank you, Pooh, because that's what I was just about to go to, right? So at the end of the day, when you think of poor whites, right, that's a slice of their community. When you talk about black people and you focus on the inner city, you're making it like that's the whole pie.
Man,
all right.
Man.
All the time. Right. Yep. And every group, Hispanic, Asian, Jew, you name a group, you're going to have a high level of people in that group that's kicking ass, you know, creating businesses and this and that, millionaires, billionaires. Then you have a middle class of that group who's doing well. They're out doing, they're sending the kids to college. You know, they're not all but wealthy, but they're making it happen. And then you're going to have a lower class of that group who ain't doing shit. That's every group. But when they show the black community, that's the part they're trying to paint a narrative that all black people fall in that group, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's the other thing that drives me crazy. Let's get, we got Mark here. What does Mark say here? Mark says, the continuation to keep black people in their place, media reinforces through focus on inner city, schools reinforce it through curated history, banks reinforce it through access. Absolutely.
Good,
but
baby,
you don't hear that. You see, this is the thing, though. So, I want to be clear here, too. What my man is saying in some of his stuff, we agree with. Black people need to be more accountable. Black people need to take care of their family. There's things that we need to do a lot better. We need to focus on it. We need to man up and do them. But it's not the silver. It's not the only reason why we're not striving and thriving, right? There, multiple things can be true at the same time. Go ahead, Chris.
So one of the things that we run into is, when these things are lifted up and exposed, they're dismissed as isolated. Just like with the police brutality thing. Couple bad apples. Then the whole orchard was bad. And it was like, well, damn, maybe we do need to wear body cams. Maybe we do need to.
Right,
so it's
right,
like,
right.
Golly, how many people had to die over this? You know what I'm saying? But the moral of the story is, when it's them and something goes or something is illuminated, it's all hands on deck. We got to fix this. When the farmers needed, it was welfare for us, it was subsidies for them. You did? Like, how dare you ask the government for money?
That's so true. But that goes to that point. It's how the narrative is positioned.
Absolutely.
It's subsidies, and then there's welfare, right?
Paperwork.
But here's the thing, though. Again, though, Woodson, who wrote the article in the Washington Journal, is a brother, okay? And he's a civil rights dude. If you look him up, he's a civil rights guy, right? But in his mind, it's that, hey, and look. Look where he works at. That's the, I just got finished saying earlier, right? That if this is the only pig pen that you're in, what's that old saying? Pigs don't know pigs stink. Okay. If you're in the pig pen, right, you think everything is normal. All right. But when you get out the pig pen, first thing you say is, what's that funky smell? Right. So at the end of the day, he's working in the inner city. He's trying, if you look at his bio and what he does, he's working in the city. So I get it from that framework that if you dealing, this is all the people you dealing with, and you ain't dealing with nobody else outside of that, then you say, oh, this must be everywhere. And it's not true. Here's the other thing I want to get into, because we talked education, okay? And again, people frame it like, oh, black people, you know, we had a clip. My man was like, oh, we got to get educated. We got to get this and that. And see, people say shit, and they have no clue what they're talking about. Okay, so let's go into the United States Census. Okay, this was released. This is updated September 22nd, 2025. In 2024, there were 8.675 Black Americans over the age of 25 in the United States who earned at least a bachelor's degree. Think about it. 40% men, 60% women combined. Black Americans equate to almost 30% of the overall black population of people that have a bachelor's degree and above. Now, let's do the juxtaposition of this. White Americans, all right, over the age of 25, who's earned a bachelor's degree as of 2024, equate to 38.6%. All right. So black people are at 30%. White people are at 38, almost 39%.
Eight points.
But the way it comes across, it's like black people are dumb. All right. It should be like 2%. Right. That's the frame. That's how it's framed. And even black people lead it. Let's break it down further. When it comes to master's degree, okay, nearly 9% of the overall black population have a master's degree. Black women represent a significant larger portion, 65% of that number. Mm-hmm. Where white adults, 25 and over, who own a master's degree, it is 11% of the overall white population. So two percentage points. Mm-hmm. Again, it's like they're running circles and this and that and the whole nine yards. Okay. And then finally, when we talk about, you know, advanced degrees, PhDs, you know, stuff to that nature and professional degrees, the numbers is from a professional degree and a doctorate degree. Professional, 0.7% of black adults have a professional degree, and 1.6% of the total black Americans have a doctorate degree. Again, who's leading the charge? Black women. But when it comes to among white adults, 1.5% hold professional degrees, and 2.1% own doctorates. So here's the thing, is that people don't know what they're talking about. All right. Black people, especially black women. Are you kidding me? The most educated demographic, in the fucking country. Okay. Let's be fair. People don't know that. But they're sitting here saying, oh, we got to do this. We got to get educated. Educate yourself. Or you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Right. And so, but again, when you only show people who are in movies, or if you show in Cardi B and you show in whoever in rap and entertainment, that's all people think black people do. Okay? And it's not true. We had over 300,000 black women lose their jobs. In 2025. No. Yep. Okay? That were highly educated, that was highly qualified, and more importantly, that performed their asses off. But you don't hear that. All right. He didn't write that in the article. Right. It's just that, we got to get our shit together. Go ahead, my brother.
So the tough part about it is when you think about some of the people that do get out get the spotlight. And we can go to entertainment and sports for a moment, but this is why this becomes important. Most of them cats talk about their mamas working 2 and 3 jobs to keep the family tight, to keep them fed, to make sure they can go to school to get a scholarship or to get a... That I've heard that so many times, but all of a sudden it's acting like they didn't say that. They mamas wasn't doing nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, buddy,
just chilling, waiting on it.
And here was the other thing that I found fascinating. I'd love to hear everybody's thought on this. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, obviously, so again, back in the 19, so one of the major things that Woodson speaks about, that there's not a lot of black fathers in the homes, right? And that causes a lot of different things. And that part I agree with, right? Chris agrees with that. There should be more men taking care of their families. I grew up in a single parent household, right? So I know the effect of not having a father, or especially for me, because I was more, you know, my mother wanted, tried to be those things for me, but I didn't feel comfortable talking to her about certain things where I would have had I had a man in my life, right? So those things are factual. That's something that we have to get a lot better at, right? And more importantly, we need to, and to be fair too, let's be fair, the numbers prior were a lot higher. So in the 1940s and the 1950s, the numbers were 78-80% of black fathers that were in the homes, okay? So we got to be fair here. That was a fact. However, even though they were, so this is why I get pissed off. Because again, these people fight, they write narratives that they don't know what they're talking about. So at the end of the day, they're saying today, because there's not a lot of black fathers in the home, that opens up, you know, crime opportunities and lack of education and all those things. And I don't disagree with that. I'd be fair. I don't. Right. So you need that. But here's the juxtaposition. In the 1950s and 60s and 40s, you had 7, 8 out of 10 black fathers in the homes. But we couldn't even ride the bus. Okay? We couldn't even move to a certain area to live. We didn't even have voting rights. So you can't sit back and say that today, that moral decay is keeping us back, when 50, 60 years ago, when we had that morality, right? And it was set up, but the system still stopped us from moving ahead. So my point is, multiple things can be true at the same time. Go ahead, Chris.
So the issue that you run into there is called superest correlations, right? And so let me give you an example of a superest correlation. Per capita consumption of margarine from 2000 to 2009 was at the exact same trend line as divorce rates in Maine. So just because the number said one thing doesn't mean they had anything to do with each other. Let me explain what I mean by that. The divorce rate for white Americans has increased precipitously over the last 30 years. So that means you have a dad and a mom living in two different homes. But the narrative of, because the kid doesn't live with dad, hadn't transitioned over to, well, that's why Timmy is building bombs in the basement, or that's why this or that, or whatever the case may be. It's not a situation where, because something happened, it created this. Environment is not destiny. You feel me? You from Detroit. If it was just it's like the caste system. You was raised in Detroit, you gonna work on a car, you gonna wear some gaiters, you know what I'm saying? That's not how it works, bro. And so the idea of falling back and putting us in a cage or in a confinement that says this is all this person can do, or this is all you can expect from them. You know what I'm saying? You know, we got a statement, it be your own people. No, it be all people. People are bad.
Right.
People are bad. And so this concept of, hey, if dad was there, or if things was better, things would be better, probably. More than likely. But that one-to-one ratio thing, because it's a lot of young Caucasian children that didn't go to college, that grew up with mom and dad. It's a lot of young Caucasian children that didn't whatever that you would have thought they would have. When you talk about the PhDs, so you're saying that this high percentage of PhDs, from what you've stated, came from low income, low education, low morality homes, whereas 2% higher came from the picket fence, blah, blah, blah. This painting that we create in our head, this Norman Rockwell painting that we create for white Americans, we have to stop allowing it, and we have to stop investing in it. You said it, and I'll end with this part on that, Tony. My grandma used to always say, it ain't what you call it, it's what you answer to. Them saying it, I can't control what they say. It bothers me when we start ingesting it. You know what I'm saying?
And that's it. But here's the thing, though. I want to put a pin on something, because you make a great point, and we need to go there, right? Is that, and I still agree that we need to, as our people, we definitely need to take accountability for our actions and what we do, right? However, let's be fair here, okay? The morality issue is not just in the Black community, right? Okay? The morality issue is in every community. There's absolutely not a community that doesn't have a higher, that there's single parent moms. There's not a, and so when you keep framing it that it's just the Black community and their morality is out, what is it? Murder. Murder. 8 out of 8, it was 81% or 89% Black people are murdered by Black people. Okay, so you hear that Black on Black crime, huh? But then you don't hear the other part, okay? That 78% of white people are murdered by white people, all right? But you don't hear that. You don't hear that, okay? So my point is, so basically, wherever you live at, you live in a predominantly Black neighborhood, right? Then if you get murdered, most likely it's probably from my Black, all right? If you live in a predominantly white neighborhood, and if you get murdered, most likely it's probably from white, right? So, but my point is, but we don't talk about the morality issues when it comes to the white community, right? We don't talk about. And look, man, I got a lot of friends of mine and people that I grew up with and friends that are white, and you know, they tell me their stories. Okay, you know, one of my friends, she grew up in a trailer. Okay, and then she went to college. Okay, and she has a family now. She's married. They have a son who's about to play basketball for school. I know people that were white that grew up. They didn't have a lot. Okay, they were struggling in the whole nine yards, right? But you don't hear about their struggle. Okay, you don't. You don't hear none of that. Okay, and so when I hear their stories, I'm like, shit, wow, I didn't even. Yeah, and let's be fair too. Let me throw myself on my sword, right? Okay. Because at the end of the day,
for you too, baby.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Because at the end of the day, I was one of those dudes too. Like, white people poor. For real, right? Because if you read a narrative that they all rich and they going, and that's not true. They're poor. They go through the same issues that every other group goes through, right? But they don't paint those narratives that they paint with Black Americans. Go ahead, buddy. So you've got something for me. I want to hear.
So situation is, I'm using this as a narrative. I grew up with a white dude. Me and him the same age. We do the same stuff. We end up having the same trajectory. When he arrives to where we are now, he made it to his destination, to his place. I got lucky. To hell with, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was always supposed to come and come out the hood and make it into something, because that was his place as a white male American. Where if I make it to that same podium, man, you got lucky. God blessed you. You was favored and fortunate and all this other stuff. And we can't allow for that. I hate when you get into someplace, they make it seem. My wife's biggest complaint is when people act like they doing us a favor when we paying for something. We had moved to the South, and we went to buy a crib. And the lady, it was a nice crib and everything, but she was making it seem like we was going to be happy with whatever they gave us. And my wife was like, hold up. My money is green.
Yeah. Man, what is right. I'm buying this.
You're not doing me no favors, Miss Sue.
Like, you know, like they're doing. But again, no, bro. They see you like, oh, shit, your ass must have been eating, you know, salami sandwiches.
That's right. Vienna sausage.
Pony sandwiches. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You probably ate one meal every week, right? And like, what are you talking about? It reminds me, remember the movie Soldier Story? Remember that?
Yes, absolutely.
You ever seen the movie Story?
Absolutely.
Howard Rollins. So remember when Howard Rollins showed up, you know, Black Captain and this and that? back.
With Woogie in there.
And exactly. And he showed up. And then the white captain says, oh, man. So he said, did you go to the West Point? And he was like, no, I went to Howard University. And then he was like, was your father rich or something? Because he's like, you an officer. And he was like, my father was a mailman.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? It's like, it's got to be over something.
Absolutely.
And then he's like, no, my father was, I went to Howard University. I didn't go to the West Point. I went to Howard University. Absolutely. And your father rich? No, he was a mailman. Absolutely. What? Why? See, this is the point here. There's this narrative that's like, oh, they're only this. They only do this. They only act like this. They only live like this, right? And it's not true. Now, is there a portion of the community that act like this, live like this? Yeah, but that wouldn't be no different than any other group, okay? And that's what makes me so mad, man. And then, like you said, black people saying, my man Woodson, he black, he wrote the article, right?
Right.
And they don't look at the whole perspective.
Right. Before we get to what the people said, because I want to see what they're talking about, I'm going to tell you a true story from a week ago.
Okay.
Me and my wife, we leave in the islands. We went to the South Pacific for vacation. We leave in the islands. And we going into the lounge because we got it like that, right? We going into the lounge. So we happened to be in front of an older white couple. Well, she wanted to look in the gift shop. He went on up to where the lounge was. And so as we're coming up the stairs, they probably was in their 70s. White dude, white woman, they cool people, I guess. I don't know. He said, oh, they not letting us in there. They just letting business class membership in there. And we was like, oh, okay. And we went on and walked in. Walked in, checked in, and my wife hears him say, how did they get in here? And my wife could, I'll let it go. I could care less. We in here drinking champagne, chilling and all of that. He couldn't let it go, bruh. He couldn't let it go.
Again,
are they in here?
Exactly. Because they don't see you as business. You ain't at that level. Right. You ain't again, bro. Again, when you frame narratives like this, right, mm-hmm. people believe and that's all they see and hear. Mm-hmm. They'll believe them. Right. But to
Absolutely.
Your point, let's get some of these before we get out of here. Let's get some other stuff here on the table. So right here we got who is this? We got Mark. And Mark says, what do you got here, Mark? They claim moral decay in black folks and many others for centuries. I don't buy that view, especially looking at how they use that for racism, xenophobia, and support of genocide. Absolutely, my brother. Absolutely. Go ahead, Chris.
That whole savages narrative, that's why we're trying to take Greenland, because they can't take care of themselves. How the hell a whole country can't take care of themselves?
Exactly.
That's the agenda.
And then from Reggie says, my son went to Paris on a student exchange in 2011 and was exposed to poor, uneducated, and distressed communities. It changed his life. Exactly. And, you know, I can relate to that because I was in the Army and I went to Korea. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I saw that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, and that changed me because even from coming from Detroit, Michigan, and again, we wasn't rich, but my mother worked. We went to school. Mm-hmm. Okay. But when you see what you have here in the United States versus seeing where other countries deal with, that woke me up, right? Because we're very blessed, regardless of the circumstances, right? But here's the thing, though, my brother. You know, one of the things I want to leave here is this, is that, and we got to remember this too. So let's be clear, crystal. We're not saying that Mr. Woodson's article was totally off kilter. He is right. Every human being needs to hold themselves accountable for the choices that they make, right? And at the end of the day, you have a family. You need to be there and take care of that family. And you don't need to blame other people. That's the part we didn't get into because they're just blaming white people. I have never been around. Buddy, where is this happening? Because at the end of the day, even if my friends and everybody saw racist stuff and they know the deal, none of them sit back and say, I can't move ahead or, you know, this and that because they won't let me and this and that. Even if that's true, they out there still trying to make it. So it drives me crazy, right? But at the end of the day, we need to hold ourselves accountable. We need to make sure, but we also got to acknowledge that there is a system. Okay? And multiple things can be true at the same time, and it's not making excuses. It's not victim. That's the other thing I can't. Next week, bro, we're going to do a show on what is a victim. Okay? Because I hear that, oh, you guys number victim. What are you talking? They, again, have no clue what the word means. Exactly. But we're going to do something on that, right? But here's the thing. The one thing I want people to leave, yes, we got to be accountable. But also, when people don't see everyday professionals, entrepreneurs, managers, nurses, executives, and business owners who look like them, they start to believe their environment is the whole world. That invisibility shapes expectations, ambition, and how people understand their own potential.
Like my man said, he had his son go to Paris. Exposure expands expectations. Once you see it and you like, man, these people, they ain't better than me. I could do that too.
Exactly.
And, you know, kind of reemphasizing what you say as we close, while historical injustices and systemic factors shape the environment, the individual does have agency. Now, let me be clear. It is harder. There is a black tax, but people succeed despite the challenges, and that's what makes us special. That's what makes us grinders. So to close, if we only talk about the morals, we ignore the machine. If we only talk about the machine, we ignore the choices, the agency. And if we show dysfunction, people stop believing in progress. Black America is not broken. It's unevenly seen at this point.
Buddy, thank you. Say that last part again.
Black America is not broken. It's unevenly seen.
Unevenly seen. That is so true, my brother. Look at you, man. Look at the profound thoughts and stuff from my brother Chris B. Reed, right? That is so true. It's unevenly seen. Okay. So, what's your thoughts? We want to keep hearing from you guys. Look, at the end of the day, Chris and I, you know, and look, we appreciate all of you who have, you know, joined us today and shared your perspectives on this topic. Hold on, Reggie just said, absolutely, Chris. So he loved your profoundness as well, right?
So.
You know what I'm saying? And so at the end of the day, thank you for joining us and sharing your perspective. And let's be fair here, too. Let's educate our people when they start saying dumb shit like this. Okay,
right.
Because at the end of the day, we need to put, and I'll end it on this. I remember, so again, my ex-brother-in-law, he was married to my sister, and him and I chatted in the summertime, okay? And I think it was it Charlie Kirk? It was something we talked about. And then he said, man, I got to be honest, you know, I'm hating these black, you know, they're bringing us all down and this and that. Hold on. So he's saying the same shit.
He bought in.
Yeah,
the Kool-Aid
in,
has
right?
been drinking.
And then he's drinking, buddy, drinking both straws, right? And then, so I heard him out. But then when I broke it down to him and talked about all the things that we just got finished talking about here, you know what he said? He's like, man, I never thought of that. You're so right, Tone. You're right. I didn't even. But again, when they pushing you and you start thinking that we are just done and I'm like, bro, you know how many people get up and I even brought him back to his own reality in his own life. You know, you went to work. You did this. You did that. Don't I, you know, hear that. Right. And so it's important to everyone that we educate people when they come with this narrative, black and white. Right. Again, there's all different type of levels of group in a group. You're going to have an achieving group. You're going to have a group in the middle and then you have a group at the bottom that's not doing anything. That's just not black people. That's all people. Okay, so let's quit saying black people ain't educated. We just went through the stats. Okay, at the end of the day, they are. Okay, so think about it. And here's the final thing. I keep saying it, but I got to say this because Chris and I talked about this before we came on. Here's the thing, and I want you guys to think this through. I really want you to marinate on what I'm about to say. Okay, on one hand, we ain't doing shit. It's moral decay. Policies have taken over and we now blaming other people for our demise and this and that. And we're using racism as excuses and this and that. Okay. But then on the other hand, they're telling their white constituencies that black people taking your job. All right.
We doing too much, right?
You got to vote this way because they taking your job. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they giving them stuff and they're not qualified for it and all that. Okay, so think about that for a second. On one hand, we ain't shit. On the other hand, you got to jump up and say something. You got to stop them before they go too far, okay? So think about it for a second. If we were horrible, if we were so lazy, if we were uneducated, if we were unqualified, if all we did was make excuses on our reasons of not moving ahead and all these things, then why bother us? Just let us go to the side. We shouldn't be in nobody's way. We shouldn't stop anybody because guess what? We ain't going to do nothing. But what do? They continue to put roadblocks and all different type of things in our way. So they know that we will strive. They know that we'll keep pushing forward. They know that we'll make water into wine. That's the reason they keep getting in front of us. So it's important that everybody educates brothers and sisters. And look, white people, Hispanic, Asian, the same narrative, right? Because that's really what it takes to push back on this stuff.
Absolutely. And so just to bring an analogy, in hooping, we call them people self-checked. If it's a dude that we know can't score, we're not even holding him. Don't even worry about
that. Why don't we worry about
him?
He's
only going to hurt the team. Yeah,
he's going to hurt
us.
He get ready
we
to shoot.
We want him shooting.
Every time
that's
he get ready to shoot, you say, he off.
Yeah. Let him be.
Before
let
he even shoot, he off. Yeah. He off.
So, but you don't double team him. You don't make rules for it. You don't create a system.
He's the last person to get picked anyway, right?
Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, so you ain't even caring about what he
Self-check.
Do, right?
Self-check.
Buddy, thank you. Yep. So evidently they care about what we do.
Absolutely. So we want to thank y'all for rocking with us. You know, these are wonderful Tuesdays, you know, especially when y'all get engaged and get a feedback that keep us motivated and moving. And so we appreciate you for coming out and checking us out. We also want you to check out our weekly segment on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, Need to Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton. Each week, Dr. Burton brings Need to Know to you, where she dives into timely and crucial topics that shape our community and our world. She's passionate, she's powerful, she's highly educated, multi-hyphenated, and you don't want to miss her opinions, her perspectives each week.
Absolutely. And don't miss our new show, A Mixed Executive Perspective, hosted by Grace Food and Corey. Basically, Grace is really diving in about identity, executive leadership, fear, purpose, and belonging, giving voice to perspectives too often left unheard, honest, thoughtful, and necessary. You don't want to miss it. Every Wednesday, A Mixed Executive Perspective here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast.
And then we want to remind you to check out Pull Up Speak Up. So basically, in a nutshell, similar to what we did today with you back and forth, we have a group of panelists that sit around from different backgrounds, different diasporas, education levels, economic levels, and they talk about hard-hitting topics that are shaping our world today. Every voice counts. Every perspective sparks change. It's not just talk. It's a call to action. And we want you to join the revolution on Pull Up Speak Up. And then, of course, we always would be remiss if we didn't leave you with our call to action, which is to embrace less, L-E-S-S. Our goal is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we're asking everyone to embrace less. One of the things we talked about today, the L, learn. Educate yourself on racial, cultural, historical, economic nuances, educational. So therefore, when you're in these conversations, you can say, that's not true. That's not factually correct. You might want to check this, because that just helps you understand and not be infiltrated with things that make you feel less, whether you're black or white. You should feel good about what you have going on.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned about other racial and cultural and systemic nuances, now you can be more empathetic because you can put yourself in their shoes.
And the first S stands for share. You don't want to hide it. You want to divide it. You want to enlighten others. You want to get involved in things like we're doing here and share the good news with each other so we can go out and spread the good news.
Absolutely. And the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. You heard us today. That's what this episode is about, stopping discrimination. All right. And as simple as, you don't have to get on a podcast to do it. It's as simple as at the Sunday dinner table, if Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe says something that's inappropriate, Instead of sitting there with your mouth open or giggling, you say, "Ah, Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that." And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S will build a fair, more understanding world. And we all will see the change that we want to see because less will become more.
We want you to go ahead and double click, check out the catalog, subscribe, like, and absolutely comment. If you hear something that we said on an old episode, the comment's still open. Put the comment in there. We'll look at it and might get back to you. But we want you to tune into those episodes, tune into the next episode, come back next Tuesday and rock with us. Check out the newsletter. Check out the website. The newsletter is called The Monthly Perspective. Sign up for it. Go to the website, sign up for that. Give us a review. Let us know what you want to hear about and subscribe. Where can they subscribe to us, Tony?
My brother, they can subscribe right here on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow a Black Executive Perspective podcast on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at a Black Exec. For a fabulous co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Chris B. Reed. For all of you, our guests who showed up and chatted and provided your perspective, we love you. Next week, bring somebody back with you, all right? Grab their hand. Tell them about BEP Live. They got to come check it out, whole nine yards. Don't forget to check out our Podcast Academy, which is launched. We have a new cohort starting on February 7th. I know my boy Reg is going to be there. Looking forward to him getting behind the dial and getting behind the mic and making it happen. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We screamed about it. We didn't fight about it, but we educated about it. Regardless, we're going to keep striving and thriving about it. And we love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.